We're doing a Gedot HaTalmud. We're up to Gittin Daf Nun Zayin, and the Gemara is now going to tell us about the destruction of the city of Beitar. According to some, it should be pronounced Beitar. If you recall, the Gemara introduced this series of stories of Kamtza and Bar Kamtza, the story of the two roosters of Tur Malka, and now this third story, the Gemara introduced them with the verse that says that a person who is hard-hearted will fall. And the Gemara seems to be telling us that part of what caused the destruction was a certain narrow-mindedness. I don't know if inability is the right word, but maybe the people weren't willing to look beyond the moment. And they stood their ground on small details that ultimately caused huge destruction. So the Gemara tells us like this, that the custom of the people of Beitar was that when a boy was born, so they planted an erez, a cedar tree. And when a girl was born, so they plant a tree that's also from the cedar family, that's called turnita. And then when the bride and groom would get married, so they'd cut down these trees that were planted when they were born, and they'd build of these trees their chuppah. They built their canopy for getting married with those trees. So this was a custom. And just as we saw last night, the idea of having a rooster, male and female, walking before a chasan and kala was also a custom. And last night we saw that the people of Tur Malka beat up Roman soldiers because they took away the rooster from the chasan and kala. So for a custom, they endangered the whole city and ultimately brought about the destruction of the whole city, because these soldiers went back and told the king, the Jews beat us up, they're rebelling against you, which the king sent his legions and destroyed the city. So today we're going to see that the people of Beitar were also zealous over a minhag, over a custom. And it happened that the daughter of the Caesar was riding near the city of Beitar. And the one of the sides of her chariot broke. So the servants saw these beautiful cedar trees planted. So they cut down a cedar tree to fix her chariot. And the people of the city saw this, and they came and beat them up. They said, "What are you doing? These cedar trees, that corresponds to Yankel, and that corresponds to Rachel. You're killing them. These cedar trees correspond to these young people. How are they ever going to find a good shidduch?" So they came and beat up these soldiers because they were cutting down trees that their custom was that these trees should be saved for them, these children, when they get married. Yeah.
Perhaps conceivable also that even the Roman saw these trees, didn't even know that they were, they might have just thought they didn't even know they were owned by anyone. They just thought, "Look,
right?" It seems like the Romans didn't know. The Gemara seems to say that the soldiers just needed some wood, so they cut it down. They didn't mean to start up with us. And so they beat up these soldiers. The soldiers came back to the Caesar and they said, "You should know that the Jews have rebelled against you. They beat us up. All we did was take some wood for your daughter's chariot." So the Caesar sent the battalions against Beitar, and that is how the city of Beitar was destroyed. It's interesting that the Gemara is pointing out how small things, getting a person upset at a meal, bar kamtza, a rooster, a cedar tree, what's the big deal? Yeah, the big deal is you're messing with the king. The destruction of the temple really came because of things that we disregard. The idea is, Chazal tell us, sinat chinam, lashon hara. These are things that we usually think, what's the big deal? That's why the destruction came about, because of things that, what's the big deal? That's... so I don't know if it's avodah zarah, but it teaches us to keep things in perspective. When Yirmiyahu laments the destruction of the Jewish people, he says the verse Gada Bachori Af Kol Keren Israel. With God's anger, he uprooted all the horn, all the glory of Israel. And Rabbi Zera quoted Rabbi Abahu, quoted Rabbi Yochanan, that this refers to the city of Beitar, that they sent in 80,000 generals, people who were in charge of the trumpets, meaning they were the generals, that they came in with their soldiers, with their battalions, and destroyed and murdered man, woman, child. And the Gemara tells us that there was so much blood from the city of Beitar that there was a stream of blood that trickled all the way from Beitar to the sea. And you might say, well, Beitar is right near the sea. So the Gemara says, no. Beitar is 2,000 amma, 2,000 footsteps from the sea. It's a distance in order to have a stream from the city. And throughout that path, those 2,000 amas from the city to the river, to the sea, there was a river of blood, the blood of the people of the city. Now, why is Beitar referred to as the Horn of Israel? Because he was in the city of Beitar, was Bar Kokhba, who ruled. He was like king for 2.5 years, and that's why his kingdom is called the Horn of Israel. The Gemara continues to describe what happened in Beitar. Rabbi Lezer Gadol says that there were two streams of water near Beitar in a place called Bik'at Yadayim. One stream went in one direction and the other stream went in the opposite direction. And when the blood of the people of Beitar trickled into the streams, our sages said that a third of the stream was just blood flowing through the stream. Another Brisa says that there were 7 years that the Gentiles living around Beitar were able to harvest their fields without giving any fertilizer. The blood of the people of Beitar acted as fertilizer. The Medrash tells us that there was a great warrior in Beitar named Bar Kokhba. And he was king of Beitar. And he had an army of 200,000 brave soldiers that in order to enter his army, they had to be willing to bite off a thumb, to bite off a finger. That was a sign of bravery. That was how they could enter his army. Whoever could take off a finger showed that he had inner fortitude, inner strength, and he could be accepted as a regular soldier in his army. Chazal tell us that the sages sent word to Bar Kokhba, and they said to him, stop doing that, what are you doing? You're causing all the people of Israel to be Bali Mumin, to be people who are slightly crippled, missing a finger. So he said, so how do I check if they're really that brave? So the rabbis told him, tell them that they have to uproot a cedar tree. They have to grab a cedar tree and pluck it out. And Bar Kokhba accepted that idea, and when he accepted that, he was able to amass another 200,000 soldiers who could uproot a tree, a cedar tree. So these are his soldiers, and nonetheless, when it came time for the city of Beitar to be destroyed, even though he had almost 500,000 soldiers who were so powerful, they what? 400,000. Yeah, that's a huge army, right? So the commentaries explain that the people of Beitar were proud. That's why they planted cedar trees when their children were born. They wanted to show that we are strong. And their pride is what caused them to really be brought down by these generals. They thought that we'll be able to reap the fruits because of our might. And God made it that their blood fed the fruits. Their blood, as we saw earlier, fed the fruits that they grew for 7 years. There is a stunning story. The Gemara tells us that Rabbi Chiya Bar Avin quotes in the name of Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha. Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha was the son of Rabbi Akiva. Because the Romans murdered Rabbi Akiva, the rabbis were scared that they'd come after his son Rabbi Yeshua, so they nicknamed Rabbi Yeshua as Rabbi Yeshua, the son of the bald one. Rabbi Akiva was bald, so they didn't want to identify Rabbi Yeshua as Rabbi Yeshua, the son of Akiva. In order to hide him from the Romans, they nicknamed him Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha, Rabbi Yeshua, the son of the bald one. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha said, an elder once said to me in passing that, you see that valley over there? In that valley, Nebuzaradan, the general, killed two, comes out to, the Gemara says, Matayim v'achatesre ribo, which comes out to 2,110,000 Jews. He murdered, he executed in that valley. And in Jerusalem, Nebuzaradan killed another 940,000 people, and he slaughtered them on one stone, like a guillotine. Put their neck on the stone, kill, one after another. Almost 1 million people on one stone in Jerusalem. And it reached a point that the blood was flowing till it reached the blood of Zechariah ben Yoyada, the king. Now, Zechariah ben Yoyada, the Kohen. That, if you recall, Zechariah was the Kohen who really helped the kings, the Davidic dynasty. And Yehoash, the king of Israel, decided that he's making himself into an idol. Now really, who Yoyada, Zechariah's father, was the one who saved Yoash's life, right? Atalia was killing out all the Davidic dynasty, and Yoyada took Yehoash and hid him in the Holy of Holies. Years later, his son Zechariah is the Kohen Gadol, and Yehoash grows old, and the people tell Yehoash, look, if you were able to be in the Holy of Holies for a few years, must be you're godly. And they want to make him into an idol. Walks in the Kohen Gadol Zechariah and says, don't make him into an idol. And Yehoash wants to become an idol. And even though he owes his life to Zechariah's father, to Yoyada Kohen, because Zechariah is standing in his way, he kills him. And he kills him in the center of the temple. And Zechariah's blood, we have on tradition that there was a stain of blood from his execution that remained on the temple floor and remained bubbling. And Nebuzaradan, after killing over 3 million people, walked into the temple and noticed on the floor of the temple that there is bubbling blood. So he sees that there's blood that's still steaming, and it's already been 252 years since Zechariah has been killed, and the Jews have been trying every week. They mop the floor in the temple. They had a special way of cleaning the floor, and that blood doesn't budge. So Nebuzaradan asked the Jews, what's that? And the Jews said, oh, that's blood from one of the sacrifices that's on the floor. So it's bubbling because it's spilled. It's not where it's supposed to be. So Nebuzaradan said, that's not true. Bring me other sacrifices, I want to see their blood. And he took different animals and he spilled their blood near that blood, and he saw it wasn't the same. So here you have a mass murderer, and suddenly he sees bubbling blood, and he's interested. He says, wait a second, there's an interesting phenomenon. So he's willing to experiment. Suddenly he becomes very scientific, and he sees that the bloods don't match. So he says, no, this is human blood on the floor. Well, he's just killed 3 million people. He knows what human blood looks like. So he tells them, fine, if you guys tell me what this blood is, then fine. And if not, then I'm going to have them bring combs of metal and they'll peel off your flesh. So you have a choice. Either tell me without torture or you'll tell me with torture what's going on here. So the Jews told him, look, there was once a prophet amongst us who told us to repent, and we didn't want to listen to him, so we murdered him. And it's been 250 years since we killed him. This is during the period of the first temple, right? And his blood is still bubbling. So the Gemara just went back to the period of the first temple, after the story of the great massacre of Beitar, which was the second temple. Now the Gemara is discussing the first temple. So Nebuzaradan becomes the avenger for Zechariah's blood. He says, I'll avenge his blood. I'm going to get him to calm down. Okay, he's found a purpose in life. So Nebuzaradan brings the 71 judges of the high court and all the judges of the lower courts, and he executes them over this blood. So he's poured the blood of court after court, the greatest rabbis of the Jews, and the blood is still bubbling. He brought young men and young girls and slaughtered them over the blood, and the blood is still bubbling. And then he started bringing children from the cheder and slaughtering them, these children who never did anything wrong in their lives. But Nebuzaradan, he's a pious person. He's avenging the blood of the Prophet, and he slaughters them over the bubbling blood, and now he's moved a little bit. He just killed many, many children. And he starts lamenting. He says, Zecharia, Zecharia, I've already destroyed the best of them. I've tried avenging your vengeance. Do you want me to wipe them all out? Is that what you want? At which point, the blood stopped bubbling. And you have this murderer. He just murdered many, many people. And he is moved. And he said to himself, wait a second. All this blood was bubbling because one person was killed unjustly. What about me? I just killed so many people. I killed so many people unjustly. What's going to happen to me? If this blood, if the vengeance lasted for 250 years for one person, I killed millions. And at that point, Nebuzaradan had real regret. He left the army. He sent word to his family. He sent them directions how to divide up his estate. And he converted to Judaism. Nebuzaradan became a Jew.
So it's a Roman?
Not Roman.
He's a
Babylonian, yeah. So Nebuzaradan became Jewish, and the Gemara is now going to tell us that even the most wicked non-Jew can have wonderful offsprings. The Gemara tells us that Haman's offsprings taught Torah in Bnei Brak. We're still going to see who that was. Sisera's offsprings taught Torah in Jerusalem. And the Gemara says, who were Sisera's offsprings? That Shmaya and Avtalion. That they were the offsprings of Sancheriv. Sancheriv's offsprings taught Torah in Mass, and that was Shmaya and Avtalion. As far as Haman's offsprings, I think the Gemara says either it's Rav Shmuel Bar Shelat, or I think it says somewhere that it was Rabbi Meir, if I'm not mistaken. The Gemara says, so we're going to pause here. We'll pick up over here, Bezat Hashem, next time. I will finish with one last point. The Gemara says, "Akol Kol Yaakov." There's no prayer that works unless there's the voice of Yaakov amongst that prayer. And Hayadaim Yedei Esav. The Gemara says, "The hands are the hands of Esav." There's never a world war, a war that spreads throughout the nations, and that one side is victorious unless that side has from the sword of Esav among them. So both blessings came true. The commentaries explain that the idea is the trait of Yaakov is truth. And when one is coming to pray before his Creator, the only way in which God will accept his prayer is if he connects to the truth. If a person's prayer doesn't really come from the depths of his heart, he isn't true in his prayers, then it's not accepted. That's how the commentaries explain this. Gemara.